Hi, this is Randy, and you're listening to The Beauty Brains, where real scientists answer your beauty questions for Tuesday, September 30th, 2014. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm Randy Schuler, and I'm here, as usual, with my co-host, Perry the Russian Romanowski.
Hey, Randy. Hey. I'm Polish.
But you have a Russian story for us, don't you?
I do. Well, I remember last time we had the Russian TV folks coming over.
I know. Just as we were wrapping up a recording of the last episode, they were knocking on your door.
They were, and so what that was actually, it's kind of funny. On the internet, you just get contacted by people, especially when you're a blogger. Or a famous cosmetic chemist, apparently. Mm-hmm. And I got this email from someone claiming to be from, you know, Russian TV, and they were doing a documentary on cosmetics.
Yeah, it doesn't sound suspicious at all.
Right. My wife thought the same. And then they said, well, we want to send a cameraman over to your house and interview you.
Perfectly
to me,
fine.
It just seemed like, yeah, sure.
What could go wrong? And then, I remember to send money to those Nigerian bankers as soon as you get done with the Russians.
Right. No. Well, my wife was a little, a little unnerved by it, but you know, it seemed all right to me. So they, we planned it. They came over, and it was two guys, and they were, you know. We set up like a desk like where I supposedly work, and actually I do work there, but then we would put like stuff on the table that, you know,
sure, make it, yeah, props, totally.
sure make it look good. And actually, you know, I had did a little chatting with some of the folks at R&D over at Method.
Mm-hmm.
You familiar with, sure, Method?
Funky packaging.
Anyway, they were very appreciative of chatting with me, so they sent me this big box of stuff. And so in the interview, we set up a bunch of these Method samples on the desk to make it look like, I was doing some work with that. So anyway, we went through some of the questions. It took them probably an hour and a half to set up the shots,
mm-hmm,
and then the interview was maybe 15 minutes.
Hmm.
And so... I don't know. I talked in English, so unfortunately, you know, there's only one word that I know in Russian.
Let me guess.
I know yes and no.
Let me guess. Would that be watermelon?
That's right. Arbuz. I know watermelon in various languages.
Mm-hmm.
I figured if you can't learn every language, right? So you should try to learn one word in every language, and the word I picked was watermelon.
The most shallow yet broadest linguistic approach I've ever heard, but well done.
Indeed. So the interview went well. They did ask me this one question about a conspiracy of French cosmetic companies in price fixing and stuff, which I hadn't heard anything about. Did you ever hear anything about that?
No, I'm not familiar with that. But shame on them.
Apparently there's something like that. But it went well. I'm looking forward to see how the interview turns out.
Is that something we might be able to post to the website? Will we have access to that through YouTube or something?
Yeah, they said they would send me a link. And if they don't, I will follow up and try to get a link on that. And we could put that in the show notes.
Ah, Nostrovia. Not sure what that means.
Jenkuya.
Maybe Polish. I don't know.
I think that is. Jenkuya definitely is.
Very good.
Hey, you know how you always do that little that game where you always make me lose? I think I won last time.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Why do you ask?
Well, you know, I was doing a little research on this other project I'm working on, and I stumbled on the FDA's cosmetic website. Mm-hmm. You know, the FDA, the regulatory body for cosmetics in the United States.
The Food and Drug Administration.
Yeah, they have a whole website section devoted to cosmetics, and it's a great place to go if you have questions about cosmetics.
Are you sure? Because I read that the FDA doesn't regulate cosmetics at all.
No, they absolutely do. In fact, every color that goes into your cosmetics has to be certified by the FDA.
But wow, who knew?
that is neither here nor there. What I noticed, they have a little cosmetics quiz there on the FDA site, and I thought it'd be fun. It's just a 10-question true or false quiz. I thought we'd just go through this and see how you do.
I never thought of the FDA as a playful bunch, but yeah, sure, let's give it a shot.
All right, so these are all true or false. Number one, FDA must approve all cosmetics before they go to market.
Am I supposed to draw a card for chance before I guess, or how does that work?
No, it's just true or false. Game.
Okay, that would be false.
False, and you are correct there. You know, they're not like drugs. While you're not, you don't have to register your products with the FDA before you sell. All right, true or false? Using mascara the wrong way can cause eye injuries and infection, even blindness.
That sounds ridiculous. I can't imagine that, but I'll say true.
In fact, that is true. The most serious risk from mascara is scratching your eye with the mascara wand.
Yes, that's why I'm very careful.
All right, number three, tattoos used to be permanent, but now lasers are an easy, reliable way to erase them. True or false?
Oh, wow. There's some gray area there. I know lasers can destroy some of the ink, but I don't think any of them are 100% foolproof. There's some gray area there, but I'm going to say false.
And indeed, it is false. Okay. Lasers have made it easier to lighten tattoos, but it's not as easy or reliable as many people think. So you get that tattoo, it might be there for a long time. All right, true or false, number four, cruelty-free or not tested on animals means that no animal testing was done on the product and its ingredients.
You know, I feel like I'm cheating because we just talked about this in last week's episode. That's false.
You are correct, and to learn why, you can go back and listen to last week's episode.
I like what you did there.
But basically, the FDA does not regulate those claims. All right, true or false, there are non-animal tests that can replace all animal testing of cosmetics. True or false?
Oh, once again, we just covered that, and I know there's some inhalation testing, for example, can't be replicated, so that is false.
You are correct. That's false. All right, halfway there, and you haven't missed any. You are so far a cosmetic expert. All right, number six. If a product is labeled all natural or organic, it's probably hypoallergenic.
What? No, false.
You're right. Remember, poison ivy is all natural, too. But you probably don't want it on your skin. For those wacky folks at the FDA. All right, number seven. Even if a product is labeled hypoallergenic, it may contain substances that can cause allergic reaction for some people.
That would be true.
You're right, true, because the word hypoallergenic has no real meaning, and pretty much if your company can decide why it's valid, you can use that term.
Go for it.
Number eight, true or false, choosing products with the claim dermatologist tested is a way to avoid an allergic reaction or other skin irritation.
No, not really. False.
False, that's right. Dermatologist tested doesn't really tell you much. It leaves you wondering about things like, did the dermatologist work with a manufacturer? How was it tested? That sort of thing. So, number nine, lots of lipsticks on the market contain dangerous amounts of lead. True or false?
I'm going to say it's okay to have lead in your lipstick.
And answers to beauty questions you're dying to know.
Wait, now I forgot how the question was phrased.
So is it true or false that lipsticks are laden with lead?
Laden with lead, that would be false.
That's right. We've seen this under urban legend pop up on the internet, and so it's untrue.
Some people have written books about this.
And number 10, this will be the break even. If you get this one, you are indeed a cosmetic expert, according to the FDA. True or false, about 60 to 70% of what you put on your skin is absorbed into your body.
I think it's closer to 90 to 100%, so I'm going to say false.
That is correct. False, although 90 to 100% doesn't get absorbed into your skin. Let's not get that out there in the meme population.
Sorry. Just kidding, folks.
So congratulations. Your score is 10 out of 10, and so you got it. And I hope the folks out there following got their 10 out of 10, too. The tattoo one was a little shaky. But,
yeah. Those are tricky there at the FDA.
But there you go. So the cosmetic quiz. Congratulations, Mr. Schuler. Well, you are
that was,
a cosmetic
expert.
That was
a fun little game. Unlike you, I like any game that I can win. All right. Well, we do have a question of the week that we can get to.
Oh, okay. Great.
But first, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
Hello, everybody. Hello. Hello, it's a shampoo that glorifies your hair. So, hello, everybody. Hello. With softer, lively curls and brighter, sparkling hair. So, hello, everybody. Hello. Hello, shampoo. Hello.
Remember, Halo Shampoo glorifies your hair. I'd like to see the claim support for that one.
Wow. How do you quantify glorification?
I think that's the beauty of the claim.
Indeed.
All right, so back to that question of the week. This one comes to us from Mia.
Hi, this is Mia from St. Louis. It's obvious that you guys know a lot about ingredients, but you also talk about advertising, product safety, and government regulations. It seems like there's more to the job than just understanding chemistry. Can you explain more about what a cosmetic chemist does?
All right, thank you, Mia. And that's, I mean, that's actually a rather insightful question because, you know, cosmetic science is kind of this deep, dark secret until you learn about the industry. You know, they don't teach you really anything about this in school. So, you know, until you sort of stumble on the wide world of cosmetic chemistry, it's kind of an unknown to people. Wouldn't you say so?
I would agree. And actually, most of the cosmetic chemists that I've talked to, probably say 90%, didn't even think of going into cosmetics when they were studying chemistry in college. They just kind of ended up in the industry because that's where a job was. I know that's how I ended up there.
And the same for me. But I think with this podcast, we can change that.
I agree. And with the Chemist Corner podcast, which you can also...
Yeah, Chemist Corner, blah, blah, blah. All right.
Well, let's talk a little bit about cosmetic scientists, because I guess you and I could be considered cosmetic scientists, but we were actually a more specialized version of a cosmetic scientist. We were formulators. So there's a little bit, there's kind of a difference between, say, a cosmetic chemist and a cosmetic scientist.
Yeah, the terms aren't exactly interchangeable.
Right, because in the cosmetic industry, all sorts of scientists are employed. There are cosmetic chemists, and those are the formulators, or they might also be involved in, like, you know, process engineering mm-hmm. or things. But a lot of times you might have somebody who studied biology, and then they work in a microbiology lab in the cosmetic industry, or people, you know, they work as regulators. And so, you know, you could be a chemist, you could be a chemical engineer, a biologist. So any sort of science can really find a job in the cosmetic industry. But when we talk about cosmetic chemists, we're typically talking about formulators. And formulators are the people that actually come up with the recipes. That's kind of the main job. Mm-hmm. But kind of like a chef is responsible for both cooking and preparing the menu and making sure everything gets put out, the cosmetic chemist is kind of like the head chef of the whole product development section. So not only do you got to come up with the recipes, you got to make sure it's made correct, you got to make sure the dining room is set up right, and sometimes it can get pretty overwhelming. So it's a lot more than just, you know, knowing the chemistry. It's getting the product, you know, ultimately to the market.
Yeah, I would, you know, again, you can use many terms, but, you know, you described it as the position as a formulator. I would think of it as a product developer, which maybe is a little more broad, because as you said, you're not just, you know, creating the formula itself. You're creating kind of everything around the product to one degree or another. And this is going to vary too. You know, the exact role you would have in product development is going to vary from company to company.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, why don't we just talk about the different kinds of companies that are that are in the industry and where cosmetic scientists might be found.
Yeah, I mean, you might just assume, well, you know, the companies that make the cosmetics are the places where the cosmetic scientists are, which is, you know, true to some extent. You know, but there are other companies within the industry where you could find a job as a cosmetic scientist. So we'll break down a couple of those. So first of all, there are what we would call the finished good manufacturers, or the cosmetic companies are probably what most people would refer to those. So there we're talking about the Procter & Gambles and the L'Oreals and the Unilevers of the world, just to name a couple of the big dogs.
Right, and that's the type of company that we were at.
Right, so these are the companies that actually make and sell the products that you use.
Right.
Then you also have the raw material suppliers. So these are the companies that make the ingredients that are sold to these finished goods manufacturers, you know, which they use to then make the products. So that's another type of company you might work for.
Right.
There are also private label laboratories or private label manufacturers. And, you know, if you ever go into like a Walmart or something where they have the Walmart brand on the shelf next to, you know, the Pantene shampoo. Well, those products aren't made by the same finished goods manufacturers. They are made by companies that let Walmart put their name on the label. And the companies that make those products for other companies are called private label manufacturers.
Yeah, or contract manufacturers.
Yes, correct. Then you'd also have consultants and testing laboratories where you could find cosmetic scientists working. You might have a laboratory that tests products that are made by a cosmetic company. And of course, you might find cosmetic scientists working in government as regulators, or even in academia, you know, at universities and so forth. So, you know, there are quite a few different places that you could find a position in addition to just the companies that make the products.
Yeah, and a lot of times, when cosmetic chemists retire, they don't, you know, they just leave a company, but then they become consultants. And when people are looking to start their own line, they'll get one of these, independent cosmetic chemists to help them put the formulas together.
Exactly. Or if you're a Russian TV producer, you might find one of these consultants to interview.
Or if you're looking for expert witnesses, feel free to contact some of these cosmetic chemists who aren't tied to any company in particular.
There you go.
So there are a lot of places that people can, cosmetic chemists or cosmetic scientists can find jobs, but there's also a ton of different types of jobs that they can do.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we talked pretty extensively about the product development cosmetic chemist, and it's probably the majority in the cosmetic industry, it's probably the majority are product development chemists. That's the majority of a single job now, but there's lots of other jobs. There's the analytical chemists, and you know they run machines to make sure that the raw materials are of high quality, mm-hmm. and they help to troubleshoot production batches. Sure. And actually, if when you're studying chemistry in college, you're mostly trained as an analytical chemist.
Right.
Because you run the GCs and the IRs and that sort of thing. So there are fewer of those jobs in the cosmetic industry than say formulators. Then there's the manufacturing engineers who help to scale up the products essentially and make sure the plant has the right equipment or mixing equipment and filling equipment. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times if you're a chemical engineer, that's where you'll end up. Working in the plant. Then there are safety specialists that are going to evaluate the raw materials and the finished goods to make sure that the products are safe. Say there's regulatory people who will make sure that your formulas are compliant with global regulations, and there are people who works in toxicology and run safety testing. Then other jobs like microbiologists, perfumers are kind of like product development chemists, but they make the fragrance end of it.
Yeah, it's a good way to look at it.
And yeah, then we have claims development, and so these are people who, whenever you see a bottle of a personal care product, it's going to have a list of claims. And
it glorifies your hair.
Like it glorifies your hair. And you'll need somebody who can verify that that statement is not false. And so that's the job of the claims development people. We have quality assurance people who, you know, just make sure every batch is high quality. Then, of course, you find some scientists, they go over to the dark side and become marketers. Actually, it's just funny. There's a little natural tension between the R&D folks and marketing in the cosmetic industry. And it's only because marketers...
think they know everything.
No, they just want a lot more than that's possible, you know? Which, you know, it's good on them. Then, of course, there are some educators and, you know, public relations scientists. And so that's the kind of things that a lot of product development people end up doing. But, you know, if the company's big enough, they're going to have consumer outreach. And actually, did you see that video the other day? What was it? Good Morning America?
No. What video was that?
My old boss, Tara, was on Good Morning America. She's a VP there, but she was doing public outreach for Johnson & Johnson talking about baby products.
Oh, excellent. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, so that's the kind of thing that cosmetic chemists will do.
Okay, so that's, I mean, there are a lot of different roles. Let's, to answer Mia's question, I guess let's really talk about it from the perspective of the product developer or the formulator. You know, so instead of trying to explain what all these different careers do, we'll kind of look at that role as of product development as kind of central, right? Because I think you could argue they have the product developers have the broadest exposure or the most responsibility across, you know, all those different career aspects. And if, I mean, it may help too to think of it, you know, of a specific example, so we could talk about the creation of a new shampoo and conditioner if we need to use, you know, some specifics. So,
yeah, and I think it's worth noting that, you know, the smaller the company is, the more likely is that they have less chemists, and that chemist is usually going to have to take on the role of all the roles.
Yeah, so. That's an excellent point. I get, you know, that's going to vary tremendously from company to company, and the sequence of these things will vary as well. But we'll just try and lay them out just to give you a kind of a good idea of almost everything that a product developer would do. So, first up, I mean, you talk about creating the idea. Now, this may come from, you know, some fundamental research in beauty science that you become familiar with as a chemist or some other, you know, other scientist. And it also may come in working with your marketing partners. But at the very least, the product developer should help, you know, co-author concepts. Whereas the marketing professionals, you know, may have an understanding of what the consumer wants, it's going to be the scientist who's going to bring the technology to the table that will eventually bring the product to life. So your role is to really inspire the marketing team with new product ideas.
Yeah. And also you are sometimes involved in the market research, and so you can pick up clues on what consumers want too.
Mm-hmm.
And then after you get involved in doing the ideas, then you're going to have to turn that idea into an actual product, or, you know, essentially a formula. And this is the part where you're like a cook, where you actually come up with the recipe. Mm-hmm. You know, you're kind of the mixologist, and you figure out the proportions, and you got to figure out what you want the formula to do, how it's supposed to perform, how you can prove that it's going to perform this. You know, and there's just the basic stuff you're going to be doing, like stability testing to make sure it lasts a long time when it's on the shelf or in people's bathrooms. You know, you have to make batches and clean your glassware.
Yeah,
there's
a lot of drudgery involved in that. I mean, it's very rewarding, but there's also a lot of grunt work that you have to go through in developing formulas.
Oh, yeah, and especially if you're testing new prototypes. You know, I always try to test them on myself, mm-hmm. and so that can get challenging.
Yep.
You also have to, you know, work with your suppliers and your fragrance houses to make sure that your product smells good, and you have to write briefs and you do stuff like that, and you have to work with consumer panels. Yep. And additionally, you have to work with other groups like your packaging group, your microbiologist, and, of course, there's the regulatory people who you know, tell you the stuff that you can't do.
Yeah. And and again, the larger company that you work with, the more likely you'll have to partner across departments to get that job of actually developing the product done successfully.
Yeah. So people skills is actually important.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. You mentioned consumer research a minute ago, and you know, in some companies that falls under the you know, the wing of the marketing division, and in some cases it is part of research and development. But in either case, a good scientist should be listening to consumers to help get new product ideas as well as refine, you know, existing ideas. In this case, learning what consumers might like about your shampoo and conditioner that you're developing. And this is where we would spend a lot of hours watching focus groups behind those one-way mirrors, right? I don't know if anybody in the audience has ever been on the other side, you know, and participated in one of those focus groups. But, you know, the consumer research group would ask people to come into a room, sit around a table, and talk about their experience using a product. And then the chemists and the marketing team and whoever else are behind the glass listening and taking notes, trying to glean some insight into, you know, what could make the product better.
You know what my favorite part of market research was?
What's that?
The soda pops and M&Ms.
You were going to say the snack food. And it's not always done in that focus group setting. I remember a couple of times we would actually go into people's houses and interview them in their shower and videotape them talking about, if not actually using, a product. So, you know, if we're doing a new shampoo and conditioner, we'd go in their shower and you'd see where they sit the products, and they would show you, you know, how much they use when they pour it into their hand. And, you know, you sort of get to observe consumers in the wild, you know, in their natural habitat rather than just in a focus group. So that's...
Although typically wearing bathing suits.
Typically, yes.
Right. Yeah.
So, but that's a kind of a fun part of the job as well.
Right. You know, another fun part is helping with the development of advertising. And you know, one of the things, if you watch beauty commercials, there's often some sort of demo or illustration. And it really takes the scientist to help make that come alive or even come up with that idea. And so I recall we had done a bunch of different types of demos. And it's just kind of fun. You're just trying to come up with some visual that kind of makes sense, and it is fun to do. And you know what that also can lead is for you to go you know, talk to beauty magazine editors, for example. I remember a couple times I flew out to New York just to go around and show little demos to beauty editors, and we did some presentations out there. And yeah, there's you end up doing a lot of that too.
Can I tell you my favorite story about developing advertising, or at least working on a TV commercial?
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, we would send technical representatives along when TV commercials are filmed. So that's another role of the cosmetic scientist. You're there on set to make sure that, you know, the product is used appropriately and any demonstration is technically accurate. Well, I worked on the product Static Guard, you know, which is a spray to you know, neutralize static on clothing. And our spokesman at the time was Willard Scott. Remember, he was the weatherman on the Today
the
Show.
Weather guy.
Yeah,
he was
America's number one weatherman back in the day. So he was the spokesperson for the brand. So I flew out to Baltimore, where he was filming this commercial. And the idea was that this model, you know, had a long pink dress on, and she would have static on, you know, clinging to her nylons, and she would reach down, or Willard would reach in and spray it with Static Guard, and the static would go away. Well, we had set up the demonstration where we would rub a balloon against the dress. They actually sent me samples of the dress she was going to wear. And we had it set up where we knew if we used this balloon on, you know, on the fabric of the dress, we could generate static to be used in the commercial. So it was, you know, fairly reproducible, and we thought that was scientifically sound. Well, we get to the studio, we're, you know, Willard's waiting there, we're trying to film, the model, you know, is set, we're rubbing her with the balloon, static's not working, we're not getting any static, which, you know, means the whole thing is a waste. We tried everything, we could not figure out why it wasn't working, and the model says, oh, excuse me a minute, and she goes back into the dressing room, she comes right back out a couple of minutes later, she goes, let's try it again, we rub the balloon on the dress again, and boom, the static worked perfectly. We couldn't figure out. I'm like, we're doing exactly the same thing. What did you do when you went in the back to the dressing room? And she said, I just took off my panties. So somehow there was some kind of grounding effect with her underwear. To this day, I don't quite understand it, but we were able to make the commercial work, and Willard Scott was happy. So.
Wow. Well, that's great. And whatever happened with the panties?
Let's not go there. So besides advertising, another role of the cosmetic scientist is to, you know, write and review that label copy you mentioned a minute ago. You know, when you read not only the claims on, you know, a bottle of shampoo, but the net content statement that tells you how much is in the product, any relevant warning statements, the ingredient list, all that information is prepared and reviewed ultimately by the product developer.
Right, right. And that again, that depends on how big your company is, but it might go through five different departments, right, and you just being one of them.
Yeah, precisely.
You know, another memory I have from the formulating days is that I'd get a phone call at like 3 o'clock in the morning when a batch that they were making came out wrong, you know? And so that's one of the jobs of the cosmetic chemist, too, is to ensure that the large batches of your product end up within specifications. And this is especially true when it's a new formula, because the compounders are just trying to figure out how to do that. So you as the formulator have to work with this operations team to make sure that, you know, the scale up goes smooth. And if there is an issue, you know, and the QA people can't handle it, they're going to contact the formulators.
Yeah. And, you know, it's when you're making this in the lab yourself, you're making, you know, maybe a kilo or something, you know, a pound or something of the product at a time, but you may be making, you know, 10,000 pounds in a manufacturing plant. And so the chemistry and the mixing processes can be quite a bit different. So that's why you get those calls at 3 a.m.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You touched on this a little bit earlier, but, you know, we do have a role in educating the rest of the company about the products and their benefits. And particularly the sales team need to understand what the product really does. So when they go into their accounts, you know, I'm talking about now the people who actually sell the products into, you know, the Walmarts of the world, the grocery store chains, the drugstore chains, and so forth. So they need to understand exactly how the product works so they can do a good job of, you know, being convincing when they sell it. So we would go into the sales meetings and do a little dog and pony show on how that worked. And then sometimes we would even go into, you know, the customers, into the store, into the buyers for the stores, and, you know, come in as the, you know, scientific experts to explain in person how the products work.
Right. And related to that was, as I talked about, doing what we call desk sides and doing show and tell events for beauty editors.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that we kind of were responsible for was, you know, following up on problems of consumer complaints. I remember one of the projects I had was that we had these VO5 tubes, and for some reason the tube was bloating. it was filling with gas, and it would just be this big fat tube, and then when you open it up, it kind of like squirted all out. And so we got a lot of consumer complaints, and we had to go through and investigate and figure out what was causing the bloated tubes. I'm not sure if we ever did figure it out, but the problem kind of just went away when they changed some manufacturing procedure. But they go to the cosmetic formulator, cosmetic chemist, to figure out those kinds of problems too.
Yeah, most companies will have some sort of, you know, 1-800 number that consumers can call if they have a problem. But, you know, those calls eventually get funneled to one of the scientists who worked on the product answered. I remember we sold a clear shampoo, and we started getting a flurry of complaints about balls of mold in the shampoo. So we would tell the people, you know, we'll take a look at it, send, you know, and we would send them a postage paid envelope, and they would mail the product back to us. Well, by the time the product would get to us and we would look at it in the lab, it looked perfectly fine. It's like, well, there's nothing here. It's just as clear as it's supposed to be. And there's no microbial contamination. I don't know what's going on. But eventually we got enough of those complaints. We figured out what was happening was that, you know, some people, their bathroom, you know, was a bit chilly, especially in the winter, and it wasn't mold growing in the product, but it was the surfactant crystallizing out because it got cold. And so it just wasn't quite soluble enough at lower temperatures. And so you'd get these big sort of puffy looking balls that were just crystallized surfactant. And as soon as you warm the product up, it was clear again. So they would, you know, take it out of their bathroom and send it to us. It would warm up and it would look perfectly fine by the time we got it. So we eventually figured out how to reformulate to maintain clarity at lower temperatures. But that was kind of an interesting challenge. Yeah.
I remember it used to be a fun little exercise to read consumer complaint letters too.
Well, and sometimes you just have people go off on a rant. You know, we sold hair relaxers and we would get, I remember one letter, a woman threatened to come in with her box of hair because she was having a lot of breakage issues after using the relaxer, and she was going to come in with her attorney and her box of hair and give us heck, I guess. Yeah. You know, and speaking of attorneys, that's the other thing, one of the other things that cosmetic scientists do, and that's work with attorneys on intellectual property issues. Now, that may be, you know, trying to obtain a patent on some new technology that you've developed, or it may be, you know, protecting the company from lawsuits from other companies when they think you're infringing on their patents. But in any case, the cosmetic scientist plays a big role in that as well.
So there you have it. That's a pretty thorough explanation of all the things that a cosmetic chemist might do. Actually, there's probably more that we forgot, but you know, it can be it's pretty tough to be expert in all of these areas. The one thing you have to be expert in is the formulation part, right. But people also expect you to be expert in solving problems and regulatory issues and testing and being and even being creative. So yeah. It's a fun job, but it certainly can be a challenging job.
So there you go, Mia. If you or anybody else you know wants to go into the field of cosmetic chemistry, now you have a little glimpse into it. And if anybody has any specific career-related questions, Perry, where would they go for that? Is there a website where you could learn more about that?
You could check out our other website, chemistscorner.com, where you can learn all about that. But if you have beauty questions, you got to go to thebeautybrains.com.
And you could go there and pick up our latest book, It's Okay to Have Lead in Your Lipstick.
And answers to other beauty questions you're dying to know.
And you can get that from our website when it's functioning properly, or you can get an ebook version from wherever ebooks are sold.
Yeah, if we have any WordPress web experts out there, we might be able to use your help.
Yeah, because, you know, fixing websites, not one of the core competencies of cosmetic scientists.
Although, one of the core competencies of beauty bloggers, apparently.
All right. Well, that's another great show.
Yeah, and don't forget to follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook or, you know, just validate us in life, as it were.
There you go. All right. Well, thanks, Perry, and thanks to all our listeners. And until next week, everybody, remember, be brainy about your beauty.
Hey, I'm Leonard Scott, and when the forecast says static cling, all kinds of problems can creep up, even if you're using dryer sheets. But Static Guard sprays away embarrassing static cling instantly.